This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Network's radio studios here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. In a minute, I'm going to play part of an interview I had with an author who I am proud to say became a good friend as a result of our first interview. Mike Resnick, well, it really hurts me to have to say that, you know, during the pandemic, we lost quite a few people, and I didn't get always the chance to talk about them or to honor them as I often do when someone goes out of our life. And Mike Resnick is particularly important to me. When I first invited him to be on the program, I had discovered him actually through another author, Carol Hart, who Carolyn Hart, who was my third guest here in the studio. Carolyn Hart mentioned Mike Resnick in one of her mystery books, and I had not read Mike at that point, and I started reading Mike, and of course he wrote some mysteries, but his primary focus had always been sci-fi, and so I started reading his sci-fi books, and they are just amazing. Fantastic. He won 5 Hugo Awards. He was nominated for many more. He also won the Nebula Award. He won so many awards, I think he set some kind of a record. But I interviewed him for the first interview when I contacted him. He said he'd love to be on the program, but he would be sleeping at the time that the program is aired because he works all night. And I said, well, what, you can't work all night? And he said, yes, for 50 years, he worked from 11 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning. And then that's when he would be writing and being very prolific. And then he'd go to sleep. So he was never awake at 11 o'clock in the morning. But he made an exception with me that first time. And then after that, he made more exceptions. But he became a friend because he knew that I was often up at, well, usually up at 4 o'clock and already working. And so we would start chatting sometimes at 4 o'clock in the morning. But I want to play this interview because he covers some very important points for all of you writers out there. And I think you will enjoy it. And then when I come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what he suggests writers do. I am feeling happy today, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Mike Resnick, who is one of my favorite authors. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Patsy. How you doing?
Okay, great. Well, I am so happy to have you back again. You know, I often think about you. Well, I think about you almost every day, actually, because there I have your books right next to me. You know, it is always so much fun to talk to you. I have so many listeners who are writing sci-fi, and they always ask me, well, you know, who should I read? And of course I say, Mike Resnick, because you are so amazing. I know
you're to be commended.
You have, of course, you know, you won 5 Hugo Awards and I think nominated for 37. You've just about cleared every other award in the business. It's just so wonderful, the work that you've done. And wow, what are you up to now?
Well, right now, I've just delivered the first book of a fantasy trilogy to Daw Books, and I owe them 2 more. And I'm collaborating with a couple of different women, with Mercedes Lackey, who your readers probably know, she's quite a bestseller. She and I are collaborating on a horse racing fantasy called Win, Place, and Fly. And I'm also collaborating with Jody Lynn Nye, and she and I are doing one called Ophir, which is based on special knowledge I have on Africa. If you will grant just one fact, that King Solomon's mines existed at one point, I know where they are and why nobody's ever found them. And we decided to write a book about it. So that's what I'm doing. I'm in the middle of four books right now.
Wow. So you are always busy. You've already written, I think, over 70, right? And
In science fiction, I think I am closing in on 80. I've done some mysteries. I've done some nonfictions. But science fiction's my métier.
And, of course, how many short stories now?
Just short of 300. I think I'm 286, something like that.
Wow. And, of course, you do like to collaborate with other authors.
Yeah, I do. It's a way of bonding with friends who I probably won't see for years at a time. I've collaborated with people in France and Australia, all over. And also, I collaborate with what has become known as Mike's writer children. Whenever I find a talented newcomer, it's not the friendliest field in the world, a newcomer, so I buy from them for my magazines or my anthologies. I collaborate with them to get them in print. And at conventions, I take them around, introduce them to editors and agents. Somebody saw four or five of them following me around like chickens following a mother hen. And that's when the term Mike's writer children arose.
Well, I know. I've talked to some of them over the years, and they are... All of the young authors are so grateful for your support because, as you said, it is not easy to break into the business. It's a difficult thing, and it means so much when they get their first story published. It really changes their life.
Yes, it does. And the flip side is that I can't thank the people who helped me. I'm 76 in two more days. Everybody who helped me is rich or dead or both. So the only way I can pay the field back is to help the next generation.
Well, I think it is marvelous. And as a matter of fact, I knew it was your birthday because I have a special song for you.
Oh?
Oh, yeah, I do. And because... Well, I just love you. And so when I knew it was your birthday, I said, I have to have Mike on, and I have a song for you. So just listen here.
Happy birthday to you, and may all your dreams come true.
Happy, happy birthday.
Okay, how do you like that?
I'm flattered beyond belief.
Well, I thought you would like that. I thought it has a nice beat. It's called DJ Bobo, and I love the beat, and I thought it would relate very well to you because,
also,
of course...
I'm very surprised. You know, my birthday's not quite a national holiday yet.
Well, I would never forget it, and so I wanted to play this song for you. You know, it has a nice... African beat, and I thought, well, you know, it's appropriate for you because, of course, you love Africa.
Yeah, I've probably done more writing about Africa than any other science fiction writer, at the very least.
Talk about some of the books that are centered around Africa.
Well, I have one called Kirinyaga that is my most awarded book, I think, worldwide. It's got something like 63, 64 awards and nominations. It just won a huge award in China as what's it called? The Galaxy Award. Their Hugo. And it was from a suggestion by Orson Scott Card. He was putting together an anthology of utopian colonies on terraformed planets, and basically, it had to be told by an insider who believed in this particular utopia, and he was talking about all kinds of utopias that he had assigned, a communist one, a thinking dolphin one, whatever, and I thought I would like to do one for East Africa, and one of the catch-22s was it had to be told by somebody who believed in it, not just a tourist who says, this is what I saw. And I thought it'd be an interesting story to find the most heinous custom I could and have my narrator defend it. And among the Kikuyu people of East Africa, at the time at least, it was considered any baby born feet first was a demon, had to be put to death instantly. And I had the leader of that colony, who was trying to establish a Kikuyu utopia, free of all Western influence, do that, and then have to defend it against the people who ran the colony. And a number of stories sprang from that, and as I say, that was one that won. I had a Hugo and Nebula nominee called Ivory. I saw a photo of the largest trophy ever taken, or wasn't even taken, ever found, the tusks of an animal called the Kilimanjaro elephant. They're about 11-12 feet long, 230 pounds each. No elephant in history, except for that, has ever had tusks weighing as much as 200 apiece. And I got permission from the British Museum to go see them. They're not on public display because they think the elephant may have been poached, that he was not shot on license, which is ridiculous because back in 1898 they weren't giving out licenses. But anyway, they're not on display. I saw them, and I talked to my agent, and I said, you know, I think I could do a really interesting book following the tusks from when the elephant was killed or died in 1898 until the British Museum got their hands on them 40 years later, because I gather the tusks were originally sold at auction, and a number of the people who owned it ran into all kinds of serious problems. One got murdered, one got robbed, whatever. And she said, yeah, well, you know, we might be able to make a couple of $1,000s with that, but if you would remember that you're a science fiction writer and follow them for the next 6,000 years, we got a bestseller here. So I listened to my agent, and sure enough, we did.
That's wonderful.
And I've done an awful lot of stories about Africa. You don't want me to describe each of them.
No, but it is wonderful that you have written these stories. And, of course, Kirinyaga is a beautifully told story, and rightly so very, very popular. When you look back, I mean, this is an amazing career of writing all of these books, and you are still so active. And one of the things I always tell authors that you have to be out there selling yourself, because you cannot sit back sort of on your laurels. You have to be out there always promoting yourself. And you have so many fans in the sci-fi community. And I know that over the years you did so many conferences. But that is one of the things that a writer has to do, right?
Yeah, you have to be available. In fact, you have to make yourself available for anybody who wants to talk. I have been a guest of at I think something like 55 conventions. That's a lot of very nice all expense paid vacations, but once I'm there, I got to work like hell, give speeches, sign autographs, talk to beginners, whatever. And you've got to keep your name in front of the public, and you got to keep doing it by writing new stuff. It'd be nice if you could write one classic when you were 23 and live on it for 50 years, but very few of us can. For example, last year, I'm an old guy. I really am. I'm 75. And in 2017, I had out 6 books. This is what I do. I found out years ago, many, 50 years ago, that nobody phones or knocks on the door between 10 at night and 6 in the morning. And for more than half a century, that's been my work day. And I think I get a lot extra done by making sure nobody's going to interrupt or bother me during the time I write. As a matter of fact, I'm up early talking to you.
Why?
Ordinarily, I'd sleep till about 3 o'clock.
That's what...
But for you, I would get up any old time.
Okay. Well, I'm glad because
I think it's always so remarkable that authors really, of course, you have to love what you're doing, and it is a wonderful profession because you can keep doing it. As you know, Mary Higgins Clark is 89 years old, and she's still writing, and her books are as fresh today. Her last book, I thought, was as good as anything that she's ever written, and that's the wonderful thing about being a professional writer, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's nothing to stop you from continuing to produce, and in fact, the longer you've been doing it, theoretically, the better you become at it. It's a very satisfying thing. You see your name in print, you please and hopefully influence readers and writers,
and it's fun. It's fun.
It makes your life. It's a real kick when you read a story you've written and it came out pretty much the way you hoped it would when you sat down to write it.
And to know that your books are translated into so many languages, and there are people in all sorts of countries, out over there in Finland, they're reading you, in China.
Yeah, we, my wife and I, we get invited all over because of that. We were just in Barcelona, a lovely city, and I'm there. I only know one person in Barcelona through correspondence, but a bunch of them got together and comped our trip and showed us the town, and we had a great time. I can't tell you how many countries we've been to just because I'm a writer and people in those countries like what I wrote.
And it just makes your life so full. And I've always sort of felt sorry for J.D. Salinger and Harper Lee. I know, you know, they had great books, and then they locked themselves away from the world.
Well, Salinger hid. I guess Harper Lee did too, but yeah. Salinger was famous for hiding.
Oh, they hid.
Kind of contradictory.
Yeah, they hid, and there's so much joy that they could have bring to readers, because one of the things that we need to do is to encourage people to read more. I think that when authors get out there and meet the public and do these events, it just helps for readers to feel, whoa, I have a connection to reading. It will open my mind. And I so admire all of the authors who get out there and intermingle with the public.
Absolutely. Most of my friends in the field do much the same thing. We all have the same basic attitude, which is, you know, mingle with the public, tell them what we're doing, get them interested. Maybe some of them will want to write too. You never know. We're having a great time. Let's share it.
And certainly that's what Mike always did with his work. And as you heard in this interview, Mary Higgins Clark was also still with us. But I wanted to play this interview as a reminder to all of you. As he mentioned, he was just heading into his 76th birthday. I had just talked to Mary Higgins Clark, who was 89. And that was part of the joy that I think I've been able to bring to all of you listeners, that writing has so many aspects to it, but one of the is that you can keep going as long as you want. And I have been really honored to have authors on the program who have been writing when they're 76 or 89, or even like Eugenia Lovett West, who was on the program last February at the age of 99. So that's why I wanted to bring this interview back and to just remind you, Mike Resnick's work is available online. You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and all of his books are there. They're available. Excellent reading. He has a wide range. Of course, as he mentioned here, many of his books are set in Africa. He spent a great deal of time in Africa, loved Africa, and he also gave a great deal of money to conservation in Africa. So I hope that you will check out his books. Just go online. And he has such a wide range of stories. In addition to the sci-fi, he writes some really great mysteries, usually centered around dogs, because he and his wife raised show dogs. And so he really enjoyed that subject. Again, why I like so much to do this program is that I want to remind you always of books that you should not miss, of authors that you should not miss. Just because they're gone doesn't mean they have to be forgotten. And you can learn a lot from Mike's writing and just from this interview. Did you notice what he said? That he had an idea for a story. It came to his mind from something he had looked into, something he investigated, and he was ready to write a sort of one-off about the Kilimanjaro elephants. But he had an agent who saw things a little bit with a bigger picture, and the agent said, it would make a nice historical novel, but why don't you turn it into a sci-fi historical novel? And the result was another bestseller for him. And he had many best-selling books. So that's the whole thing. Sometimes, all of you who are out there and you're trying to find an agent, or you're wondering if you should find an agent, if you do find an agent, if you're lucky enough to find an agent who will help you along with your career, a good agent is someone who is I have often said a good agent is worth their weight in gold, and it is true. Because an agent will look at the big picture. Sometimes an author will be looking right at the particular subject that they're interested in at the moment. They have an idea for a book, and they're focused on that one book. But an agent will look at a career. Great agents always look at a career. They don't, it's for their own selves, because they want money to be rolling in year after year after year. But the only way they can do that is to have a writer, because it takes a lot to nurture a writer. It takes a lot to help a writer build a platform, get a name for themselves. So an agent is always looking for a way to expand a writer's potential. And that's why sometimes, I think, and I have seen it actually with some authors who have self-published, and they have a great idea, they have a great book, but they did not think sort of the long haul, that maybe they could have written it with a slightly different ending or added a few characters so that they could then turn it into a series. Because I hate to say it, but the fact is, nowadays, people like series. You can sell great one-offs, and it happens that you can make a bestseller out of it. But again, we're looking at the long term, the long haul, and so an agent will look at that. So again, if you're looking for an agent, always remember what I tell you: go to Publishers Weekly and look for active agents, people who are actually getting real deals for their writers. And they have a section there in Publishers Weekly, and it's just called Deals. And every week they list the deals that agents have gotten, and those are the agents that you will want to query. And we're going to talk in a little while. I'm going to have a author on, Amanda Flower, and she has written quite a few books, I think over 20 books, and we're going to be talking to her about her Peanut Butter Panic, which I love that. I love the title of that, and we're going to be talking to her. One of the things I wanted to ask her is about how she got an agent, because this is a question that I get from all of you. And as I said, you don't have to have an agent. Many authors don't have agents, and particularly many authors at Kensington. If you can get a great publisher, that can do everything for you. And Kensington is absolutely the top-notch publisher, especially for mysteries and cozy mysteries. And Amanda Flower is with them, too. So she's got a sort of a double whammy of why she's doing so well, and I'm looking forward to talking to her. But again, I want to tell everyone, check out Mike Resnick. You will enjoy it, and especially if you're sci-fi or interested in sci-fi. When somebody wins 5 Hugos, they've done something right. So make sure you check him out. We'll go to some commercials, and then I'll be back with Amanda Flower.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Amanda Flower. And the name of her new book is Peanut Butter Panic. Well, that sounds like what I would have gone through when I was a kid if we ever ran out of peanut butter. So I love the title, Peanut Butter Panic. And I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper today, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, this is great. I love the cover. I got such a kick out of it. So, of course, you are a U.S. Today best-selling author, and this is a Kensington book, another Kensington book, and I love always, they have the best covers, but this one,
yes.
Oh, you have to tell us about this one. Who is on the cover of Peanut Butter Panic?
Right in the center of the cover is Jethro, the potbelly pig, and he is one of the people in the village is comfort pig, and he's about the size of a toaster, and she carries him around everywhere. But my main character, Bailey, ends up pig-sitting quite a bit throughout the series, so she ends up with the pig quite often.
Yes, yes. It's so cute. The, people, you just have to get it. You have to get the book just so you can look at the cover. right there, yes, there's a peanut butter, there's peanut butter, and then there's lots of other goodies. And tell us about this series and how you came out with the idea. This is which?
Yeah, this is book 7 in the series.
Book 7.
Which is great to have a series go on so long. But I had written a couple other series set in Amish country, Ohio, and I was asked if I would write another one, and I thought a candy shop would be fun. There's a lot. I live about an hour north of where the series is set, and there's a lot of Amish chocolate shops down in Holmes County in Ohio, so I thought it would be a perfect setting, and that's kind of where the idea came from. And then, you know, every time I have to write a new book, I'm like, okay, what candy is going to be the focus? So this one's peanut butter. I've had lethal licorice and premeditated peppermint and Marshmallow Malice. So, like, every title kind of has a candy theme with kind of a murderous word.
Yeah.
Or go with it.
Oh, we need a murderous word, all right. And they're very cute mysteries. They're very well done. I love the licorice one. I'm crazy about licorice. So it's just fun when you get an idea for a series and are encouraged to write a series. And the Amish Candy Shop mystery series, I think, is really cool. I really like it. This comes from somebody who used to own a candy shop. I enjoy it. I enjoy all the little details in there. And I just think it's an adorable mystery.
Thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit about your look into candy stores.
Yeah, well, I definitely have a sweet tooth, so it's been a good series for me because I have to sample all the recipes that are in the back of the book.
Oh, yeah.
And also come up with them. But I think it really, every year, usually the day after, or actually Good Friday, the Friday before Easter, my family would go to Amish country since I was a little girl. And we would go to all the shops down there, cheese shops, and also the chocolate shops. And the candy shops were always my favorite. And it wasn't just get to eat the candy. It's just everything is so displayed, so pretty, and all the jars. And you can look in the cases and look at all the different beautiful, you know, sweets that are made. And I just remember as being a little girl just being, like, fascinated and trying to, like, convince my parents to let me have, like, more than just one piece.
So tell us about your main character and how you came about, you know, creating her. And has she taken over your head?
In a way, she has. I've been, I created Bailey King, who's the protagonist, in 2014, so that's how long I've been working on this series. So we've been together a really long time at this point. And I wanted her to be kind of a fish out of water. So she is actually a professional chocolatier from New York City. And she ends up in Ohio's Amish country because her grandparents, her father's parents, are Amish, and her father left the Amish when he was a young man. So she's gone back to Amish country often, like every summer to visit them, but she's very much a city girl. So she goes back when, in the first book, which is A Salted Caramel, when her grandfather's sick, and when she goes back, there's a murder, and then she has to stay, and some other big event that I don't want to ruin.
Yeah, don't.
Happens that she really has to stay, and so she's learning how to adjust to life within an Amish culture and not being Amish at all. So,
and with her own shop now.
Yes. So she has a candy shop that she Twist and Sweets. That she runs with her grandma, and it's right on the square in this little Amish town of Harvest, which is based on Sugar Creek, which is a real town down in that area, and it looks very similar. It has all the cute little shops and and a central square and all that fun stuff.
Oh, I love those little towns. It's so much fun to go through them, and as a matter of fact, you do stop and you do buy a lot of food when you go through between the sweet shops and the bakery. And then of course the ones where they have a nice small restaurants with really great home cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow, it's fun, and I can see that you've had a lot of fun with this series. A lot of I think you're. Your characters are well developed and enjoyable.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, when you when you started the series, oh, 2014, it's really gone.
Yeah.
As you said, it is fun that a series clicks with your readers and that they really enjoy it. Of course, now we went through these pandemic years where it was really difficult to sort of reach out or to do any events. How are you contacting your or staying in contact with your fans?
Yeah, for the most part, it's through social media and primarily Facebook. I have an author page on Facebook. It's Facebook/author Amanda Flower. And we just have a great community there. There's a lot of readers on there, and that's primarily where I interact with them. But I've done a lot of Zoom events during this time and with libraries and bookstores. But we are getting back to the in-person again, which I like. I like to see people in person. And I'll say during the pandemic, you know, there was really an uptick in selling my books because people wanted that happy escape because things were so hard. So that was interesting to experience during this difficult time, that people were reaching to something happy, and you know, my books all have happy.
That's good. Well, yes, I'm always I'm ready to read anything about salted caramel. That's for sure.
Yeah,
just say it's got salted caramel, and I will read it. Now, of course, you are with Kensington, but you also have an agent. So, how did you get an agent?
So my very first book was Maid of Murder, and it came out in 2010, and I actually sold that without an agent, but this was back when you could do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen really anymore. And then by some miracle, it finaled for Best First Novel for the Agatha Award, which is a pretty big mystery award. And when I did that, I reached out to my current agent, and I was like, hey, you know, I had been talking to her for a little while, but I was like, I finaled for this award, and she's like, oh, I'll sign you. She's pretty much done everything since that book. So I have Peanut Butter Panic will be my 44th novel that's published, so she's responsible for 43 of those, at least making the contact and all the contract stuff.
Oh, that's wonderful. And of course, it's so great when you have an agent who follows your career, helps make your career. And so her name is Nicole Resiniti. And I love that you put your acknowledgments at the front of the book, like Mary Higgins Clark always did, because she said it was so important to thank the people who got her there.
Yes. Yeah, I very much believe in it, and I thank her every book. So she's not just my agent. She's like one of my very best friends now, and she's just a great person, and I'm just so grateful for her every day. Because there's a lot of times as an author, there's business things that come up, and I just want to write.
That's you know, it. So you've been blessed with somebody really great. Now, yeah. What is your reading background? When did you start reading, as just reading, not writing, but when did you really get this love of reading?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. When I had trouble learning to read, so in second grade, I went to like extra tutoring. And I think it was the way that my school wanted to teach me wasn't working for me. It was before like phonics was popular, and it was based on sight words, and it just didn't work for my brain. Like I needed phonics. So I went to this phonics teacher and learned to read. And then I was like hooked. Like as soon as I got it, like I was obsessed with it, and by the time I was like the end of third grade, I was reading like 5 or 6 books a week. So, and then, you know, in the summers, I would just read 4 books a day sometimes, you know, and just sit and read all day.
Well, that's It was so funny. Well, the minute I saw this Peanut Butter Panic title, it reminded me of my reading when I was a kid. I grew up in northern Michigan, and our summers were just so glorious because we would just, in the morning after breakfast, we'd pack a peanut butter jelly sandwich and take a mason jar. Actually, we took a mason jar of Kool-Aid, and off we would go. I remember that sound of the screen door, slamming, and that was the sound. And then the rest of the day, we ran wild.
Yeah.
And I was thinking when I saw the title, I thought, well, if we ever got to a day where we didn't have peanut butter, that would have been a day of panic.
Yes.
So reading has a lot to, always brings this idea of peanut butter back in my mind. But I'm glad you mentioned this phonics, because this is so important. I learned at the age of 3 how to read by phonics, because my mother taught us, she would read comic books to us. We were very poor, and all we had were comic books. But she would play little games and write, like, the word Anne, and then she'd put a C in front of it, and it'd be can. And then, she did it like that, and she didn't even realize what she was doing. Right. She didn't know about phonics. She was just teaching us kids and playing games, little letter and word games with us. So by the time I was 3, I could read because of phonics. This whole idea of whole words, I think, is absolutely insane. When you take a kid and you teach them whole words, and you teach them the word elephant, and then a few days later you show them the word elevator, and they read it as elephant because they see that they're sort of the same length, and they remember. It's insane. I'm telling you, and they're still doing it. And it makes me so angry. Now they're playing around with phonics. But in the end, they still have this idea. Learn the whole word. And that's absolutely nuts. Because as you said, once you had phonics down, you can read anything. You can read, for goodness sakes, you can read Latin. You can read other language. I mean, you can pronounce the words. It might not be perfect, but you can read.
Yeah.
And this is why we have, did you realize that only 50% of American children can read at an 8th grade level only. That's all.
Wow.
50%. And that is because they are teaching them whole words, which is absolute stupidity. And I think it's insane. And parents and anybody out there, listen, just listen here. Just right now you heard testimony from Amanda Flower, and you're hearing from me. Teach your kid phonics. We did it as a game because, we had long winters. Oh, my gosh. We had.
Oh, yeah.
And so my mother would just give us a piece of paper and maybe, like, write a phrase or even our name. And she'd say, how many words can you make out of your name? And you quickly learn the sounds of an, at, it. You know, once you have that. And it doesn't cost any money. And they're paying teachers a fortune. And you can't tell me that a kid can go through to 8th grade. I mean, they go through high school. They get through high school and they can read at an 8th grade level. How is that possible?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that my parents, like, kind of got me the extra help I needed.
You are blessed by that, because most parents don't understand. The teachers will say, as a matter of fact, I homeschooled my boys because, again, they were reading at such an early age. They could not have fit in school. But many parents would come to me and say, well, the teacher calls Peter stupid. And I say, why? And they say, oh, well, he's stupid and he's lazy and he doesn't. And I always discovered that it was one of two things. Either they did not know how to read and they were just goofing around because they didn't know how to read it. Or they were, particularly in math, they were not progressing the child. You know, they would keep the kids doing 2 + 2 for 3 years instead of doing something more challenging. So, yeah, I think that's, I'm so glad I asked that question. Sometimes I just I just hit the right thing, because this has been, I did not know this statistic until about a month and a half ago. Because I lived in Europe a long time, and in Europe, really, you have literacy, 95% read high school level. I never met anybody in England or knew of anybody or heard of anybody in England who couldn't read at high school level. If they graduated from high school, they could read, because, you know, the schools there are much tougher than they are here. So I was shocked. And I'm thinking, from the point of view of writers, all writers now have to get together and say, we can't allow this, because who's going to read our books? If this generation, you know, we're running out of the generation of people who learned phonics. And if we're getting this generation who can't read, who's going to buy your books in the future? So this is something important, because we want people to read Peanut Butter Panic, because I want people to read this. I want people to get this cover. I love it. I love it.
Thank you.
It's so good. The story is delightful. Anyway, whenever you have a little subtitle, Dead by Dessert, you know it's going to be fun.
Yes.
Well, I think books about food, well, you know, even Proust, you know, what did he do for a Madeleine, right? Right? And so you have done what Proust did for a Madeleine, you have now done... with with the Buckeyes. Tell us about the Buckeyes. Tell us that part.
So that is a dessert that's very popular here in Ohio. Of course, we're the Buckeye State, and it is basically a ball of peanut butter and powdered sugar that you make. And there's other recipes in the back of the book too. And I actually just made them again, and they are so good. And then you dip it in melted chocolate, but not the whole thing. You just show the little Buckeye brown part from the peanut butter at the top.
Well, you know, the
that we have here that have these big nuts on them.
You
wouldn't want to eat a real Buckeye, because they're poisoned.
Yeah. But
I haven't killed some of the real books. I guess I could do that in the future.
Well, it's funny, you know, I had a candy store. Well, I had candy shops in England. As a matter of fact, I had 8 candy shops in England. But I introduced to England peanut butter, chocolates with peanut butter, because in England they don't eat peanut butter. They don't know peanut butter. So that was one of the things I introduced to them when I was in England, and I had these candy shops. So I appreciate this book for many aspects. The good writing, really fine writing. I'm going to pick out a few sentences. I'm going to ask you permission. I'm writing a book for authors with samples of really good sentences. And you have some good sentences in here that I'm going to ask you if I can reprint in my book for authors to help encourage them to find out how to write good sentences. Okay?
Okay.
Well, Amanda Flower, I think you're delightful. I think your books are delightful. All of them. Licorice. Oh, and I'm glad you mentioned salted caramel. I think, I love that one. So tell us about your website.
My website's amandaflower.com. So, and you can also find me on Instagram. My cats have an Instagram account. I have 4 cats. also on Facebook.
Oh, wow. Oh, 4 cats. Okay. Well, you need an Instagram account for them. Okay. Well, great. And the recipe for the Buckeyes it's in the back of this book. They're delicious. You must get this book. It's available online, wherever books are sold. Since it's Kensington, probably Barnes and Noble's there on their shelf of wonderful Kensington books. Again, thank you so much, Amanda, for being on Joy on Paper. You are a joy. I think you're so cute. And, and your books are cute. And it's been a real joy to talk to you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Amanda.
Bye-bye.
Oh, she's adorable. Isn't she adorable? She sounds so sweet. Well, if you're writing about candy, you have to be sweet. And she has four cats. Okay, Carol J. Perry, if you are listening, she's beaten you. You only have Orion in your Witch City Mysteries. And she has four cats. My goodness. Anyway, a really fun read. I got a kick out of this. And I loved hearing her story about learning to read phonics. All of you people out there, if you have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, whoever, teach them phonics. You know what? How you can teach phonics, and it's really cheap as can be. You take a piece of paper. As a matter of fact, that one of the best ways, and this is really a cool way I did it. Well, when my kids were little, you just take them like to IHOP or someplace nice like that, and Village Inn, and you sit there with a blank piece of paper, just blank piece of paper, and then you just start writing at the top of the paper. You write A-N, and then you say, how many words can you make with A-N? And they go through the alphabet, and they make that. And then you do I-T, and how many words can you make with I-T? And that you do that all, and they can do that. And in between, they can eat something delicious, and you can sit there drinking coffee and reading a good book. It keeps them busy for hours. And at the end of the time, after 2 hours, they know phonics, and they can read anything. And it doesn't cost you more than the cost of some pancakes and ice cream. That's how you teach phonics. Okay, and you will be doing them the biggest favor that you could ever do a child is to teach them how to read at a young age. So you take your three-year-olds and sit them there, and they will, at the end of 2 hours, do phonics, and they will be readers. Oh, well, and I don't know. I have to, I get on this subject. I get really hysterical because I am thinking about the next generation. If we don't have people who can read, well, in addition to the fact that they can't read anything about what's going on in the world and they can't understand any history, they can't understand, they don't understand the laws that are being passed all around. They can't read the laws. They can't understand the laws. They can't understand what they're doing at an election. And they're just being led like lemmings because they can't read. And this is crazy. This is crazy in this country. This is America. Everybody should be able to read at a 12th grade level. I mean, really. We pay a lot of money for our educational system. Anyway, everybody, remember what I always tell you and tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Haunted Haven mystery series. Wow, she's got a new book coming out October 25th, and it is going to be her day here, and we're going to be in high spirits because that's the name of her book. Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to that. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him, and I have a nice, sharp salute. Oh, boy, I wish I had been a general. I should have been a general. I'd be so happy on that pension. Bye-bye now.